welcome to the UK Gamers Podcast. Well, in this show, I'm going to diverge slightly from my normal format because I've got a lot to cover. Because in this show, I've decided to talk about the granddaddy of role-playing games, Dungeons and Dragons. Now, D&D came out way back in the 70s. It's been around for quite a while, and it's now in its fourth edition. I'm going to concentrate most of my talk on the earlier editions, mostly because they're the versions I know better, and also because I think it's quite interesting to see where the role-playing industry came from. Basically, way back in the day, there weren't really any role-playing games, and D&D basically was the first commercially available one, and it was definitely the first commercially available one that hit mass appeal. Now, Dave Arnson and Gary Gygax are credited with creating the D&D game, and there's a lot of debate as to exactly who created what, and lots of investigation into basically where the roots of the games came from and so forth. To us nowadays, it doesn't really matter that much, but basically taking the chainmail rules and doing a load of tweaks and eventually basically totally dropping them, you end up with the very first version of D&D. And originally it came as three little booklets with rules for using the chainmail combat system or an alternative combat system, and these rules were fairly rapidly enhanced with additional little booklets, including Greyhawk and Blackmoor and so forth. And these little extra booklets made the game become really D&D as we know it. Now, part of the problem with the early edition is the layout is a little bit rough and can make it a little bit hard to understand. Plus, with all these optional little rules and booklets, it's very easy for different people to be playing totally different versions of D&D. Additionally, the actual rules are very vague and assume the DM would do a lot of the heavy lifting to actually define exactly what did and didn't happen. So you won't find loads and loads of rules, just lots of, well, you know, make it up if someone wants to do this. And this is great in many ways for role-playing because you just make it up on the fly, but it can mean your players can feel a bit cheated if the DM is not the nicest DM. And also it means if you go to a different gaming group, you might have a totally different version or interpretation of how the rules work. Now, some of the interesting things about the early rules is there's only three classes. Pretty much everyone has D6 hit points, and pretty much all weapons do D6 damage. And fairly quickly, additional rules came out to give you variable hit points and variable damage and so forth. And there's a lot of debate as to whether that is actually realistic or not, and I'm sure you'll fall into one of the two camps there. Now, D&D, obviously, as I say, started to grow and become very complex and went from basically being a hobby game to being this mass market game, and it soon became apparent that there was problems that needed to be addressed. The earlier edition was just a bit too kind of specialist sort of setup, so they decided that a rewrite was required. Now, along came a guy who'd actually already sort of done this, and this guy was Holmes, and that's how we end up with the kind of blue box basic D&D. Now, we've gone from the earlier rules to a version of D&D that's starting to get a bit more like the version we know. Now, one of the additions was the alignment system went from 3 alignments to 5 alignments. The elf was slightly clarified, although it's still a little bit vague as to exactly how the elf character class works. And variable hit points and variable weapon damage seems to be the way forward. Now, interestingly, this five-way alignment system is possibly tied in to the Monster Manual, which also came out in the same year. But, of course, what's weird about the Monster Manual is it's actually for a game called Advanced D&D. And this was a new concept, but as far as most people were concerned, it wasn't really that much different at this stage. But it would cause problems and would eventually lead to Dave Arnson and Gary Gygax having a falling out. And Dave Arnson basically left TSR. Now, a year later, the next book in the AD&D range came out, and this was the Player's Handbook. Now, the Player's Handbook really did quite dramatically change the way the rules worked. There was now 9 alignments, if I've got it right, and lots of extra classes, and some of the optional classes from the earlier rules were now kind of core classes. There were rules for non-humans and you know, what class restrictions they had. There was multi-class, and there was all sorts of additional little complexity. The weapons potentially could have got a lot more complex because there were, you know, like weapon reach and strike ranks and all this sort of stuff. Now, I think most people, from what I remember, didn't really pay too much attention to some of this extra complexity, but it was there, and in theory, it now became clear that what AD&D was meant to be was a rationalised set of rules for playing at tournaments, and fairly complex and kind of more mature, and also very heavily Gary Gygax's entity, although, of course, lots of influences from the earlier version. Now, D&D, of course, was not complete, because you now have this weird situation where you had basic D&D and advanced D&D, but there was no real guide to the Dungeon Master. So the following year, sure enough, out came the Dungeon Master's Guide. And this was a massive tome, and makes quite good reading even today, and lots of great ideas in there, and some extra little complexity with now weapon charts and all sorts of stuff. So the complexity kind of got added on and added on and added on. And I think at first, from what I remember, AD&D was sort of semi-welcomed, but at the same time, people chose to use what they liked and ignore what they didn't like. So, you know, the role of D&D was meant to be changing to this, you know, everyone's playing from the same hymn sheet, but that didn't quite work in practice. Now, this is roughly where my interaction with D&D starts, because I came in just a couple of years later with the Redbox basic D&D. And at the time, a lot of the D&D booklets over here in the UK were actually paperback, not hardback. And this was partially to try and make them cheap, because back in the early 80s, you know, these books were seen as being really expensive. I think the softbacks were something like £8 each, from what I remember. I might be able to dig out a White Dwarf with some adverts in. Now, basic D&D was totally different to the original basic D&D, and it kind of sort of went back a bit more towards the original Dungeons & Dragons ideal. And elves were now seen as a definite class, unlike in AD&D where they were a race who could kind of be a multi-class quite easily and stuff. And as I say, this came as a bit of a shock to me when I finally did manage to pick up my player's handbook, because it was totally different with a different alignment system, and the hit dice were slightly different, and there was lots more complexity. But I did prefer D&D, so when I refer to myself as a D&D player, I was really talking about AD&D. Now, the thing that's interesting about this is, looking back, I was really a basic D&D player who just used the races and the class system from AD&D. I ignored a lot of the extra complexity that the three AD&D booklets brought to play. Now, where even more complexity came was when I picked up the Dungeon Master's Guide, and I do remember getting a bit confused by the experience tables for killing monsters in the back of the Dungeon Master's Guide, and that gave us a little bit of fun for about 3 months until I worked out I was not reading the tables right. It also helped some of my players jump up a couple of levels a bit quicker than they should have done. But got it all sorted out in the end, and we had all sorts of fun. Now, I was playing D&D quite heavily from, I guess, about 1981-82 all the way through to 1986. And when I say playing heavily, I mean multiple hours a day, every day. After about 1986, slowed down a bit, but still played multiple hours a week. By the time I got to 1988, my interest was tailing off a bit. Other games were starting to catch my eye. Second edition was starting to become an issue, and also, you know, a lot of the players were off doing exams or going off to university, or generally more interested in chasing girls than playing silly little games for kids. Now, what was interesting about this to me was I really liked D&D. It did have its faults, and you know, some of the bits were frustrating, and that's why we started playing other games like RuneQuest and Traveller. But D&D was still you know, the game as far as I was concerned. But there were problems. So I was quite looking forward to second edition, and foolishly, I sold all my first edition stuff so I could buy second edition. And I must admit, I was quite a bit disappointed by second edition. Yeah, it had some great stuff in there, but it didn't really work for me. You had skills, you had Thaco, you had more and more books, and of course this is where TSR started getting referred to as TSR with S as a dollar symbol rather than the normal letter. And I think a lot of people did go off D&D around this time. Of course, it was also around this time that Gary Gygax left the company. He'd been kind of pushed to one side, slightly marginalised, and he left and went off to do other projects, including the Dangerous Journeys role-playing game. And, of course, that then got him in trouble with TSR. And what was at the time quite a good game system died a death almost before it was born. And looking at it now, it's a far too heavy a game system. And this is one reason I do actually like going back to D&D, because one of the criticisms of D&D is it had no skills, it had no rules for this, and I actually like that, because it means you have to make it up and actually roleplay it. You don't have a skill in diplomacy, you just have to actually try and talk to the guy and roleplay it out. Now, obviously, if you're not particularly good at that, that can be where D&D can become a problem. In addition, where the rules focus pretty much on combat and levelling up, and that's about it, one of the criticisms of D&D is, well, you kick down a door, you kill everyone inside, you grab the treasure, and you run off. Well, a good D&D will actually allow you to kick down the door, have a chat with the monsters, persuade them to stop raiding the village, and award you XP points for, inverted commas, killing the threat, and that's the way it needs to be done. And, of course, that's why I think the Dungeon Master's Guide potentially was a great asset, because he could have talked about things like that in there. And unfortunately, looking back on it now, I think a lot of players didn't necessarily read it very well, because there are hints and bits and pieces in there how to deal with these things. But maybe they could have been a little bit stronger. Now, one of the other problems with D&D, of course, was it did require all these funky little dice. And it also did require quite a lot of time and effort, and there was nothing worse than playing for, 6 months and then having your character die. And, some people took this far too seriously. Some DMs even would vindictively, deliberately kill off a favourite character because they were not very happy with a friend. And, that's just not very good form. And I think some of the problems levelled at D&D were bad DMing, the fact that no one really knew how to roleplay at this stage because it was all fairly new, and the guidance in the books was a little bit lacking on occasion. But it was a golden era, and I think that's a well meaning phrase here. It was definitely a time of excitement, a time of great joy and innovation, and a lot of the stuff that we take for granted now was all made possible by D&D. Now, what's quite interesting is, with second edition not doing maybe so well as it should, and the arrival of Magic the Gathering, Wizards of the Coast now became a dominant factor in the game world. In fact, they became so dominant that TSR was struggling, and eventually sold themselves to Wizards of the Coast, and Wizards of the Coast subsequently, of course, got picked up by Hasbro. Now, with Wizards of the Coast, we end up with 3rd edition D&D, and this is where my connection with D&D basically stops. I bought the 3rd edition rules, didn't really like them, and within a month I'd sold them on and decided, that's it, I'm not bothering with that. I've got all these other role-playing games and board games and war games to entertain myself with. Why am I going to bother with this? In fact, I much prefer 1st edition, so I promptly went back and started buying up all my 1st edition stuff again. Now, what's interesting about 3rd edition, of course, is it's where we start getting this leaning towards, well, what I would call the World of Warcraft style of play, and this would become even more apparent with the new version, the 4th edition. Now, personally, I don't like 3rd edition. Now, that makes me probably in the minority, because 3rd edition proved to be very popular, and there's lots of people out there still playing 3rd edition, and playing variants of 3rd edition due to the open gaming license. Now, this is the one thing that I think was good about the third edition. The Open Gaming licenses allowed all these new games to come out, like Castles and Crusades, Swords and Wizardry, Labyrinth Lord, and all these extra new little tweaks to the D&D canon. Now, what's really interesting about these variants is some of them model the original three booklets from the original Dungeons and Dragons. Some of them model themselves after the kind of Holmes version of Basic, or the Moldvay Basic, and others, of course, model themselves on AD&D First Edition. And that's what's really good. You've now got this free content that allows you to play the original, earlier, and in many ways more fun versions of D&D. Now, you might disagree with me, and that's fine, but personally, I would much rather be playing either First Edition D&D or Labyrinth Lord or Swords and Wizardry than playing 4th Edition. Now, 4th Edition is a very interesting game system. I think it's very well done, it's very slick, it's got some really cool ideas, and as a fantasy role-playing game, it's fantastic. But it's not D&D. Now, that might make me a bit of a D&D snob, but to me, it's lost something. It's far too World of Warcraft. It's blatantly been aimed at the kind of computer role player thing with, you know, feats and powers and all this stuff and daily use powers. And, you know, it's a great effort. I do applaud it. I don't like the fact it's relying on miniatures, because despite what people might say, you don't need miniatures for D&D. In fact, I've never used miniatures for D&D at all. Having said that, getting back into it, I have decided to pick up some miniatures to give it a go. And, in fact, I've picked up quite a few Otherworld miniatures, which are really nice old-school D&D miniatures. And they basically model themselves over the original pictures from, like, the Monster Manual. So you have pig-faced orcs rather than more kind of Lord of the Rings film-style orcs that most fantasy figures are. Now, with regard to all these new bits and pieces coming out, a lot of it, of course, has come about because of the rise of the retro clones, as they're known, you know, Labyrinth Lord et al., and the fact that a lot of people really don't seem to like 4th Edition. I think most people who don't like 4th Edition are probably a bit like me. They've not actually really played it. They've just read the rules. Now, as I say, it's always a bit dangerous to condemn something just by reading the rules, but I've read a lot of rules. I think there's very few role-playing games I haven't either read or played or been sat at the table while someone else plays it. And just from my read-through of the rules, I can see it's going to be a great game system. But as I say, to me, it's not D&D. So why am I going on about D&D? Well, I think it's a game system that if you haven't played, you should try. I also think it's interesting that it gave rise to the games industry as it is today in role-playing and, to a degree, wargaming. Because back in the very early days, White Dwarf was a fantastic magazine that supported D&D, RuneQuest, and a whole load of other game systems, you know, Traveller, Call of Cthulhu. And what's very interesting is Games Workshop were the people who helped get D&D set up in the UK, and of course they brought out lots of really nice Citadel miniatures for adventurers and monsters to tie up with D&D, and it was only over time that they slowly emerged as an entity in their own right with Warhammer and White Dwarf as it is now. And I think this is a great shame, and if you can pick up the old copies of White Dwarf, definitely do it. I think it lost its way a bit once Ian Livingston gave up the editorial reins, but it did go on a few more issues before about, I think it's about issue 100 or 110, that it basically becomes a Games Workshop in-house organ rather than a generic role-playing and gaming industry magazine. So, great support from there. In addition, it set up a load of gaming clubs. I do remember joining one that met at a local pub, and that introduced me to the joys of things like Car Wars and Ogre, which were the Steve Jackson games, and some of the more slightly weird games out there, including things like Kensington. And it's really all due to me being a big fan of D&D. Now, as I say, D&D has unfortunately lost a bit of its shine now, because there's lots of other competing systems, many of which, of course, in many ways much, much better. I'm a big fan of rules-light systems, so things like HeroQuest and Fudge and other games like that that tend to appeal to me more than the heavy lifting rules. And I think that's the other reason why I do prefer, in many ways, the first edition, because apart from the combat rules, which are slightly complex, you know, the rules are pretty thin on the ground. And to my mind, that's best for role-playing. Anyway, there you go. I've waffled on a bit about D&D, hopefully giving you a little bit of an insight to the early days of the role-playing industry and how it kind of got started up here in the UK. Now, if you're interested in getting into that stuff, obviously eBay is a good place to go, but obviously you can end up paying quite a bit of money. Alternatively, if you want a bit of that old-school feel, you might want to consider things like Labyrinth Lord or Swords and Wizardry. Now, Otherworld Miniatures is actually also doing some nice little box sets where you'll get some miniatures and some adventures all bundled into one, so that's definitely one to go and have a look at. In addition, there's lots of great utilities out there free, and the Arcanum website's a great website that talks about the rarity of modules and books and the various versions of it. And there's also some other interesting little bits and pieces on there. So definitely check that one out. There's also Grognardia Blogspot, who's very much into the retro scene. And that's quite an interesting read at times. Fairly well updated. Talks about the various retro clones and original D&D and even some of the early games from TSR, for example, Metamorphosis Alpha, which is now available as a PDF, which of course would become Gamma World eventually. So lots of good stuff out there, and if you're a retro gamer, in many ways there's really good support and a lot of it free, which is always nice, particularly with money being short these days. Anyway, I think that's all I probably should waffle on about, so until the next time, goodbye and happy gaming.